From the Firebird Radio Studio, it's the Authors on Fire podcast with nationally syndicated radio host and producer, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, and our newest book song, where we create a unique one-of-a-kind song just for your book. And it's home to this podcast, Authors on Fire. I am Pat Rulo, and today we are joined by a Firebird Book Award-winning author, a returning author as well, Mark Shaken, a former commercial bankruptcy attorney turned author whose fast-paced 3J legal thriller series has kept readers on the edge of their seats. His latest book we're going to talk about today, titled For Cause, dives deep into corporate greed, organized crime, and technology so advanced it can manipulate reality itself. So from the courtroom battles to high-stakes investigations, Mark's heroine, 3J, must navigate a world where truth doesn't always stand a chance. Mark, welcome back to the network.
Thanks a bunch, Pat.
It's always good to talk with you. I mentioned book song at the beginning, and I had the opportunity to create one for your book. How are you using it? What are you finding? Any feedback?
Well, first, let me just say that that is a really cool offering that you started to do. And the song that you created was really wonderful. So the challenge is, okay, so now what to do with it? So I definitely posted the whole song on YouTube. I went back to a book trailer creator and had them create a movie short to the song. So if you go to my YouTube page and surf around, you'll find the video with the song, all 4.5 minutes of it. It's got a lot of oohs and ahs, so it's very cool.
Good. You and I had talked about when you do speaking events to utilize it that way, to put it as a people are coming in the room or out of the room, add another degree of interest.
Yeah, because I am trying to put together some speaking engagements for 2026. And normally as people are filing into the room, all they see is the first slide in the PowerPoint, which just has the title of the speech and then, you know, Mark Shaken, and it's kind of boring. This really gives me a chance to sort of loop the song over and over again. And I'm really excited to see how that plays out.
Oh, me too. Keep me posted. All righty. Well, let's get into your book here. For Cause, what drew you back to 3J for this story?
Oh, I never really went away. I had it's actually the fifth in the series, so right. I'm well into her character and how it's sort of playing out and developing. But I took a small break from her and the legal thrillers with the last book I wrote, which was a book of essays about getting old, without the ER, you know, love, reinvention, and I had been collecting topics to write in that book. And I got to the point where I just felt like it was a good time to write the essays. But I'd always intended to come back to the thrillers, and now I've done that. There's at least one more thriller in the series because of the way this particular book ends without giving away any secrets. So that'll be kind of fun. All the books are standalone, but the next one won't be.
Okay.
So that'll be kind of a new thing for me, and hopefully kind of a cool process to go through.
Oh, I imagine it would be. Some of these characters are hard to leave behind. I'm not sure how you're going to do that. Without giving away any spoilers, can you tell us how 3J, her challenges in this book, do they differ from any in the previous books?
Yeah, she sort of quickly in the book gets entangled with the Kansas City mob. You know, her boyfriend is a former vice squad policeman, now turned private investigator. And the particular mobster is one that his name is Ronnie, that Ronnie chased for the better part of his career. So there is this overlying problem as 3J tries to figure out how to save her client through the use of the mob. because she really can't share what's going on with her boyfriend because he explodes. And she also keeps a lot from her mentor, which she's never really done before. So there's a lot of tension between the two most important people in her life and she. That was really fun to write. And we find out at the end why the mob was willing to sort of jump in and provide aid and assistance to 3J.
Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming you did mob research?
I've done, starting with the last book where the mobster kind of shows up, I've done a fair amount of research. If you looked at the bookshelf over my desk, you'll see, you know, Mobsters Among Us, you know, Mob Central. There's a ton of books and newspaper articles to mine about the mob in Kansas City. Kansas City was a wide open town in the Prohibition era. The joke always was that prohibition for Kansas City was just a suggestion. It wasn't really a requirement. And so, you know, people would come from all over the country to drink and party during the prohibition age to Kansas City. And, you know, that leads to the mob. And it was a huge outpost for the big families in Chicago and New York, and then their own independent, you know, mob families. And the character in the book, Robbie McFadden, his father was a low-level guy in the mob in Kansas City, but didn't want his son to be. So he sent his son off to Wharton at Penn to get a business degree. And when he came back, he was sort of bored by legitimate business. So Robbie formed his own mob organization, as he likes to say, I run it like a business. Mm-hmm. So the research, and I just found a new book that I can now sort of read up on. It's really fascinating because I'm not in the mob. I'm not a mobster. And yet I've developed all of this knowledge about the Kansas City mob that I find fascinating. Having lived there for 26 years, I can't say that I really knew just how entangled the mob was in Kansas City society. You know, it's quite a list. And then I've gone back to Kansas City a couple times to go to the public library. And it's a great library in Kansas City, and it has this whole section about Kansas City history. And in there, you can find all kinds of stuff. And now with the availability of, you know, perhaps more in-depth research that one can do with ChatGPT, you can actually ask AI to find old newspaper articles for you about a particular mobster.
Right.
So it's great. Yeah.
Yeah, you can really dig deep and drill down. Speaking about research, your book features high-tech manipulation of reality. So I'm imagining that you had to spend some time researching digital forensics or deepfakes. Tell us about that process.
Yeah, each book has a tech hook to it. This one was the most complicated, but timely. I just found myself before I sat down to sketch out the storyline, I found myself looking at Facebook feeds and seeing all these reels, the mini videos that people post. And, you know, it seemed to me like the overwhelming majority of them had to be fake. Mm-hmm. You know, they just, people don't look that way. They don't act that way. I got a little interested in it. There's no end of things you can find written on the topic, but the connector that I had to come up with is, okay, that's interesting, but what does that have to do with being a lawyer? So, for decades in my career, you would get maybe a photograph to show the judge what the property looked like, and you would hand it to the witness, and the witness would say, yes, that's an accurate picture, a depiction of the real estate at issue, and the judge would let it into evidence. There was never really any question that if the witness said that was real, that it was anything other than real. Mm-hmm. Now you can find law review articles starting to pop up. What are they supposed to do with photos that have been doctored? What are they supposed to do with videos that are fake? How does the judge know whether it's real or fake? And should the judges be letting those things into evidence quite as easily as they used to? Mm-hmm. And I found that to be the great connector. So the video, the deep fake in the story, which is disclosed in the first chapter, does not get into evidence right away, as the judge gives 3J 20 days to figure out if it's real or fake. What I learned is that, you know, in the beginning, the deep fakes were kind of funny, kind of cartoony almost. They weren't very sophisticated. And the creation now of a deep fake has become extremely sophisticated. And the detection of deep fakes is always a couple of steps behind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so the challenge, especially if you're a lawyer faced with a deep fake and whether it should go into evidence or not, is to get an expert who can testify that what the expert is looking at in the video is artificial.
Very, very, very delicate situation.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So your protagonist, 3J, she's a strong, determined woman. How much of her is inspired by people you've known in your legal career, or was she just a fashion of your mind?
You know, every female at my old law firm that I came to know was 10 times stronger than I was, and unfortunately probably needed to be to advance through the firm in those days. And so I guess I would say that none of them are 3J, and 3J is none of them, but you know, you're human as an author, and so you'll grab character traits and kind of meld them all together to form a character. And I'm sure I did that.
In this book, broader themes, this one, corporate greed, corruption, technology, all central to the book. Was there a goal in mind for your readers? Was there something you wanted them to take away about these specific issues? Was it a timely concern?
So unlike past books where I might have hit discrimination and housing redlining head on, kidnapping, those kinds of things. In this book, I think the main current event theme is the dive into technology and deepfakes.
Okay.
And, you know, and for the most part, it's over the lawyers' heads. You know, 3J is in her 40s. Ish, her mentor is in his late 60s ish, and the deepfake was not around when any of them went through law school and started, you know, trying cases in court afterward.
Well, and the series also explores moral gray areas. The question maybe is, how far is too far for a lawyer or an investigator to go in pursuit of justice?
Yeah, and that's a recurring theme slash problem for 3J. In each book, she's sort of faced with standing there at that, you know, imaginary line. And how will she go over that line to save a client, and how far over, and what will she do on the other side of that line? One of the characters likes to say that they admire her because she leans past the finish line, and she does. And, you know, it creates problems. There's an old mythological story of, you know, the boy who creates wings made out of wax and flies too close to the sun. The wax melts and he plummets to his death. So for 3J, she hasn't plummeted it to her death yet, but she definitely flies close to the sun.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's a problem for many attorneys.
It is. You know, you're in your career, you're going to be faced with times where you have to decide whether what the client wants you to do is something that you're really prepared to do.
Mm-hmm. And maybe from personal standpoints too, where you almost feel like it's a moral or ethical line for you that you can't stop, that you feel like you have to cross it because you just feel you can't leave it behind.
Right. And, you know, there is a code of ethics that all lawyers have to abide by. And one of the leading easy ones to recite is a lawyer is to act zealously in representing their client. And then you have other rules that will temper how zealous you can be.
Mm-hmm.
You're not supposed to commit a crime in furtherance of your client's interests, or a fraud, or things like that. So there is a whole litany of don'ts in the rules of ethics that give can create conflict in the lawyer's mind about what they can and can't do, and what they should or shouldn't do.
Right. I don't think that's something most people think about.
Lawyers do.
Well, yeah, they would, but I think the general public wouldn't.
You don't want to lose your ticket to practice.
For sure. And you've practiced commercial bankruptcy law for decades. So you've been there, done that. You've seen, I'm sure, all kinds of things. Now, with that background, your books mix fast-paced action with smart legal and technical details. How do you approach keeping it accurate yet thrilling? That seems like that might be an interesting line to tread.
Yeah, I do have my own unwritten rule that I want the law part to be authentic and accurate. I get that a little bit from refusing to watch lawyer shows on TV where they have to resolve the entire problem in their 48 minutes, and so they're doing things that no lawyer would ever do, and in scenes that would never happen. So I would like the law part to be authentic. And I think I've figured out as I've gone along and gotten better at this how to do that. But the law part isn't, riveting sometimes. cases take a long time to try, and they're not always typically exciting. You know, what the lawyer is doing at the podium, what the witness is saying on the witness stand. And so the balance for me is to make it authentic but not dry. And that's where the storyline hopefully helps pick up. So mixing the law part with something that's exciting or interesting or exciting and interesting is the challenge. And I spend a fair amount of time before I sit down to write, as I come up with the storyline, trying to address that very question. How am I going to do this so that it has an element of excitement to it?
So giving thought pre-pen to paper or fingers to computer, how much do you do when it comes to outlining and all that forethought? Or is it a couple nuggets of ideas and you just run with it and look back and see what you need to clip and what you can keep?
Yeah, no, it's a fair amount of prep work, I'd call it. It's not what I would describe as a formal outline, but it's extensive notes to myself. I might sit down and actually write a back and forth dialogue that I have going through my mind, and I use a little Microsoft app called OneNote, which is one of their free ones, and it syncs between the phone and the computer nicely. And so if I'm sitting at lunch and some thought, crazy thought runs through my mind, I could just pick up my phone and add that to the list of topics or maybe twists and turns kind of thing. And it's really helpful because, especially as I've gotten older, if I have a great thought at noon and I get home at 2, it might be gone. And so it may very well be gone. And so the writing it down in OneNote really helps. And then you can organize in OneNote. And so eventually it kind of comes out like an outline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you ever recall previous, maybe funny or memorable moments from your legal career that find their way into your novels?
Yes and no. I don't really want any of the character. I don't want anybody that I knew in the practice of law to read a book and say that's me.
That's me.
Mm-hmm. I really don't want that. I don't want them to feel uncomfortable or offended, even if they see themselves in the book. So I try really hard to not have the characters be anybody. And if they are anyone, it be a piece of me in the characters. Mm-hmm. As far as the story, the law part of the storyline goes, I don't want any client to have that same reaction. Oh, that was my case. I never authorized Mark to disclose that case to the general public. Mm-hmm. So not really. And I hope it stays not really.
Yeah.
So far it has. Yeah.
Yeah, just for legal ramifications, I guess.
And I don't want something that I worked on to form the basis for, a creative outlet that there should, to me anyway, there should be one of those moral lines that I don't want to step over.
Exactly. I get that. I don't know if I asked you this in a previous conversation, but after practicing law, did you take any writing classes? I mean, why do you write so well?
Oh, well, thank you. I was a literature major in college, so you know we didn't take tests; we just wrote papers. And I wrote on the newspaper in college, and meeting the deadline was always the kind of those were short pieces, of course, compared to a book. But it started to help give me structure and discipline. And then, you know, law school is just all about, you know, reading and writing. That's, you know, you speak a little bit, but you read and write constantly. And then, of course, when you come out of law school and start working, and maybe to the surprise of some law students who didn't know this, but you spend your waking hours and some of your not waking hours sitting in the library researching and writing for partners. And so it's not a novel, but you learn the discipline of being concise. You know, judges have to read all kinds of stuff, and they don't really want to read run-on sentences, and they want the grammar to be good, and you want your grammar to be good because it reflects on you. So I would say that all of those things gave me the structure to be able to sit down and write, and then the discipline. I'm very regular about writing. That's just my way. I know people wait to be inspired and sit down and have a binge, but I maybe because I lack that level of inspiration sometimes, but I just sit down when I'm writing the book. I sit down for 6 days a week at the computer to write.
Interesting how everyone has a bit of a different process. Legal information and legal briefs and doesn't leave much room for the dialogue portion of writing. So how did that come to you? How have you managed that?
There really isn't the opportunity to create dialogue in any of the writing experiences I described.
Right.
You, in effect, you create dialogue when you're at the podium and cross-examining a witness. You're asking a question, the witness is answering it or trying not to answer. So that all happens, but you're not really terribly in control of what the response is going to be from the witness.
Right.
So for me, that was all new. And I started off doing dialogue by speaking out loud to myself and playing both characters and seeing if it sounded like what two people would be saying or how they would be saying something in a conversation. Mm-hmm. In the books, there's always a fair amount of examination, you know, lawyer asking questions, witness answering. And I really admire in the Michael Connelly's Lincoln Lawyer, the lead lawyer is in court all the time doing examination, and they really, it's to me one of the most accurate depictions of that process. So so for when it's an examination, I don't need to speak it out loud. I can think it because I've done it a bunch of times. Right. When it's two people sitting in an office talking, yeah, I've done that in life, but I have not written it before. So I have to hear both characters.
Mm-hmm. Your family probably thinks you're in there talking to yourself. You are.
I am. Now, the mobster talking. Okay, I really haven't done a whole lot of mobster experience in bankruptcy. So I get to decide, does he sound like a mobster? Does he sound like a Wharton grad? Something in between? A little of both. What is, you know, so that one I it's a little harder for me to hone in on what I want him to sound like.
For you to even have this opportunity to try to understand how would a mobster speak and what do I want him to sound like? That's a lot of creativity going on for you as well.
Well, I watch a lot of James Cagney and Humphrey Bogart movies.
The oldies. Yeah, you got it.
I figure if I can make him sound a little bit like educated Humphrey Bogart character, that I'm probably on the right track.
Then you're on the right track. You said briefly up front, but I want to reiterate this again. You said for new readers, they could start with any of the books, or yeah. Obviously you would recommend starting with the first, but
not necessarily. Okay. Yeah, I think the books are standalone. Each book quickly recounts who 3J is and, you know, who the characters are. There's always a meeting at O'Brien's, the fictional bar in the drinking district in Kansas City. And, That's in every book. And so there are introductory kind of elements in each of the books that you won't miss if you start with book three, if that one sounds more interesting. So I tell people, you don't have to start with book one.
Okay.
You can, but it's not necessary.
Excellent. And so you're writing the next, and then anything else? What are you thinking of after the next installment of this?
I don't know. I would answer that by saying the next book I write will be another 3J book because I have to follow up with how this one ended.
Right. But beyond that.
Beyond that, I think I'd like to write another book of essays. Mm-hmm. The last essay book was It's What Makes Me Me. And I kind of left it with me musing about what would happen when I turned 70. Well, now I've turned 70. So I suggested that I could no longer legitimately say I was older. I would have to drop the ER and just be officially old. So I think I would like to sort of pick up there and start to get off of my chest what it's like to be old.
Yes, I hope you do that because I loved that book. It's What Makes Me Me. That was a great book. And I think this will be fun for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And anything we missed that you wanted to highlight today?
Not really. You can find me on, you know, Facebook, and I'm regularly posting on social media. I'm doing a Book Funnel promo at the moment. So you can go to Book Funnel and get 7 free chapters to see if you kind of like the book and like 3J, and lots of marketing right now going on.
Exactly. I understand that. So, and your website?
It's markshakenauthor.com.
All right, markshakenauthor.com. Mark, thank you for joining us today. For Cause is an electrifying read. It's full of smart plotting, high stakes, legal drama, and a heroine who refuses to back down. And you can find For Cause wherever books are sold, at Amazon. Be sure to check out the entire 3J legal thriller series. For more about Mark Shaken and his essays and his writing journey, visit markshakenauthor.com.
What? I'm going to say one more thing. Go to YouTube and listen to Pat's song. It's so cool.
Oh, that's right. Go to YouTube and listen. And the book trailer is excellent. It was superb. And I will have that listed on the webpage that we have for you as well, so folks can find you all over the place. All right, friend. Thank you for joining me again. And we look forward to more of you. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat.